Absolutely.
Thank you.
Dr. Kolasch, are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Guarino.
Aye.
Dr. Knopf.
Aye.
Dr. Bennett.
Aye.
Ms. Powell.
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it. Any opposed? Hearing none, the ayes have it, and we will terminate probation at this point. So let's move on to tab number two, which is a matter of certification for percutaneous therapy for Dr. Brian Pohl, EDC.
Just one moment. Okay. So Dr. Pohlvie has applied for percutaneous therapy certification. His application is complete. The reason for bringing it before the board was that his education was prior to the initiation of the legislation. However, the education that he did receive is comparable to that is currently approved by the board.
Okay, and is Dr. Pohlvie present on the meeting? Okay, board members, what's your pleasure?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Ms. Powell first.
Just a question. The educational training that he's had, has there been any update since then? What's the time difference or the time lag?
Okay, so he was, I believe it was 2009 and 14. So it's been a few years, but looking at the two syllabi, the current one and the one that he took, they're substantially equivalent.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Was it Dr. Bennett? Did you have a question?
I do. My understanding of the statute says that there is a minimum of 100 hours required for percutaneous for acupuncture certification, and I see 49. Am I missing something?
I believe so, sir. I think the acupuncture is 100 hours. The dry needling or percutaneous therapy is 25.
And where is that? Where can I find that?
In the statutes, let me look them up here. I might lose you for just a second. I'm looking up in the So it's on page 38 of your laws book, and it is under R4-7-602. Hang on. 24 hours. 38 and
oh, I see. I find it a minimum of 24 in-person contact hours of education.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, but point of clarification, is this certification for percutaneous is different than acupuncture in terms of hours? And is it in addition to, or is it separate from?
My understanding is that it is distinct from.
It is distinct from, and historically, acupuncture certification was much more difficult to get because it includes energy balancing and other acupuncture theory. Percutaneous therapy is more on the dry needling spectrum, and so it's less intensive.
Okay, and Dr. Pohlvie is not with us currently? Apparently not. Okay, I have no further questions.
Okay.
This is Dr. Knopf. I would make the motion to grant licensure based on the information provided.
Okay, so certification, just for point of clarification, not licensure?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Certification.
Okay. Any further discussion? We have a first and a second. Okay. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, we will grant certification for percutaneous therapy for Dr. Brian Polvy. Next on our agenda is tab number 3, a matter of licensure with Dr. Nathan Moon.
Yes. Dr. Moon has applied for licensure by examination and PMMTP. His application is complete. On his application, Dr. Moon disclosed that he had been arrested for DUI in March 1996. The materials are attached to your board briefs.
Hi, is Dr. Moon present? Dr. Moon, if you are present, you need to unmute yourself because we cannot hear you. Okay, board members, what's your pleasure?
I would make a motion to grant licensure.
Okay, Ms. Powell, is there a second?
I'll second. This is Dr. Knopf.
Dr. Knopf seconds. Any further discussion? Looked like the DUI was back in 1996. I appreciate that he disclosed on his application. So I'll go ahead and call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it and licensure will be granted. And moving on to tab number 4, matter of Dr. Todd Glass, also under licensure.
Todd Glass. I'm sorry, Dr. Guarino, I have
yes.
Set that, here it is, sorry. I buried my board brief. So Dr. Glass has applied for licensure by universal recognition and PMMTP. His application is complete. On his application, Dr. Glass disclosed that he had pled guilty to a DUI in July of 2011. The background checks did not reveal any other reportable incidents.
Okay, thank you. And I see Dr. Glass is present.
Yes.
Do you have anything you would like to say?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Glass?
Dr. Glass, this is Dr. Knopf. No issues since this incident in 2011?
No, nothing.
Okay.
It was a very embarrassing situation, so I kind of went a little more strict on myself.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
May I ask a question? What do you mean by strict on yourself?
Well, I don't drink anything and drive at all. If I have one drink, I still won't drive. I'll take an Uber. I'm not ever going to risk anything like that again.
You have to take an Uber often?
No.
Thank you. No further questions.
Dr. Glass, this is Dr. Bennett. Have you been in practice the last 3 years?
Yeah, I was practicing for the Joint in Renton, Washington.
And your current plans?
I want to work for the Joint again down here in Mesa. I already talked to the owner. He said he would hire me as soon as I got a license.
Okay.
Okay, with that in mind, does anybody want to recuse themselves?
Yes, this is Dr. Knopf. I'll be recusing myself.
Okay.
Dr. Knopf, can you, I know the reason why, but could you please state for the record why you're recusing yourself?
It's free employment. Yes, I am employed with a Joint Chiropractic.
Okay, thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Okay, board members, anybody want to make a motion?
I will make the motion to grant licensure to Doctor.
Okay, I'll second. And we have a second. Any further discussion? Okay, thank you again for your honesty and disclosing appropriately on your licensure application. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, so I heard three ayes and one recused. So the ayes have it. Congratulations. You'll be getting a license in Arizona. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to tab number 5 now in the matter of Dr. Jason Gemmer, also for licensure.
Yes, Dr. Gemmer has applied for licensure by examination and PMMTP. His application is complete. On his application, Dr. Gemmer disclosed that he has a record of criminal charges from June of 1993 that were dismissed, and the records were sealed by court order in 2010. The usual background checks did not reveal this or other reportable incidents.
Dr. Gemmer, are you present? If you are, you need to unmute because we cannot hear you.
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Hi. Great. You have anything that you would like to say at this point?
First of all board members, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. Did have a mistake back in 1993 that I wanted to disclose, and it was dismissed. And since then, I've changed my life so much and really dedicated to this profession and happy to be here. So thank you.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Gemmer at this point?
This is Dr. Knopf. Dr. Gemmer, any plans for practicing in Arizona currently?
Yes, sir. Currently, I live in Chandler. I have a couple job opportunities. I just graduated in December from Palmer College and actually work out of the UFC gym here in Ahwatukee as the assistant general manager. And it looks like there might be an opportunity for me to kind of start my own clinic right out of the gym. So looking at that, and also I've done a few interviews around the area, just to kind of feel some things out and have a few docs that are interested. So a few things on the table right now.
Very good. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, board members, any other questions for Dr. Gemmer?
Nope, I have no questions.
None.
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make the motion to grant licensure.
Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay, any further discussion? I'll call for the question to grant licensure for Dr. Gemmer. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, I heard four ayes, including myself. The ayes have it, and licensure will be granted. Welcome to Arizona, and you'll be granted a license. And we're going to move on to tab number 6 now in the matter of Dr. Michael Wald.
Yes, Dr. Wald has applied for licensure by endorsement. His application is complete. And additionally, in December of 2019, Dr. Wald took and passed the NBCE Special Purposes Exam for Chiropractic. On his application, Dr. Wald disclosed that in 2005, the New York Board sanctioned his license with suspension, probation, and fine, and that in 2008, malpractice insurance settlements were made for negligence related to administering intravenous nutritional supplements to two patients. The usual background checks revealed these, but no other negative reports.
Okay, great. Dr. Wald, what do you have to say for yourself? Dr. Wald, you're muted right now. You need to unmute yourself. Dr. Wald, I can't hear you. Are you muted?
Might be having connectivity issues.
He's nodding yes.
I can see you, but it looks like your audio is still muted.
Dr. Wald, can you use your telephone and call in? Gigi, do you have the number?
Hello.
There he is.
Hi.
Hi.
The message said I was muted because there were too many people on the call.
Okay. Thank you. So we can hear you now, and go ahead and explain anything you would like to explain or clarify before I ask my board members if they have any questions specifically for you.
Sure. And thank you all for having me on the meeting. Yes, at the time I was also an animal licensed phlebotomist. And I used phlebotomy on two patients, and the board saw issue with the attachment of the IV line that contained nutrition into the IV phlebotomy needle, which a phlebotomist is allowed to insert. So because of that inconsistency, the sanctions were brought against me, and I did not argue with them at all.
Okay, So you were practicing outside of the scope of practice for both phlebotomy and chiropractic in your state?
No, I was, well, yes, for, I guess, out of practice for the IV line. So I'm just trying to think of your question. So I suppose that would be consistent with at least the chiropractic. I also had a certification in IV administration, but the board was not interested in that.
Well, as a phlebotomist, are you able to administer IV nutrition?
No, not as a solo practitioner, but depending on the medical context in New York, potentially. But in my my case, no.
Okay, so did you knew what you were doing was outside the scope of practice at the time, and you did it anyway? That's a question.
Oh, no, not at all. That only came after. I had no idea. In fact, I have so many certifications, I thought I was thoroughly licensed, and I was employed by a medical physician who actually told me I was within scope under him, and then this issue came up, and I found out the reverse.
I can hear you, but we're getting an echo effect somehow, so I don't know if you can turn down maybe the speakers on your computer, if you can still hear that through your phone. And I'm going to ask my board members now if they have any questions for Dr. Wald.
I'm still confused. This is Angela Powell. I'm still confused about the phlebotomy license and working under the direction of a medical doctor. I've never heard that you could not do that. And what I'm hearing you say is that indeed in New York State, you are not allowed to do that. So the medical doctor you worked for lied to you and said it's okay to do this. Am I understanding that?
I don't believe he lied to me. He just was malinformed himself. It wasn't like a clear issue. And I don't think it's ever happened before at the board or necessarily since. But no, he didn't lie. He just was misinformed.
Is it a clear issue?
I'm sorry?
Is it a clear issue that you cannot do this? You cannot perform?
Now it is. Right. A phlebotomist is not supposed to administer IV nutrition, and a chiropractor is not.
Okay.
Not in New York State. Okay. In Missouri, for example, and New Mexico and other states, yes.
Okay. And the doctor you worked for didn't know that. Okay.
Correct.
Dr. Bennett, Dr. Knopf, do you have any questions for Dr. Wald?
Dr. Wald, this is Dr. Go ahead, Dr. Knopf.
All right. Thank you. This is Dr. Knopf. Dr. Wald, Your plans for practice, should you receive license in Arizona, is it based around chiropractic adjustments? Is it around doing nutrition? What does that potentially look like for you?
It's based on chiropractic and nutrition, as I'm also a dietitian and a certified nutrition specialist with a master's in nutrition. So I combine the chiropractic with that, but no intravenous nutrition to answer your question.
Okay. You feel pretty clear on our scope of practice?
Oh, I would say I'm an expert at this point. Yes, I've thoroughly learned and studied all the jurisprudence. Yes.
Okay. That's it for me.
Dr. Bennett.
Dr. Kanoff's questions were precisely those that I was going to ask. I have no further questions.
Okay, thank you. Anybody care to make a motion?
This is Dr. Kanoff. I'll make the motion to grant licensure.
A second motion.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor of granting licensure by endorsement for Dr. Michael Wald, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, Dr. Wald, you will be granted a license in Arizona. Welcome to Arizona.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it, and I will not take it for granted.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go on to tab number 7, which is Dr. Connie Thiessen.
Yes, Dr. Thiessen has applied for licensure by reciprocity and PMTP. Her application is complete, including the receipt of appropriate fees. During the application process, staff became aware that Dr. Connie Helminger Thiessen had been arrested in Minnesota for DUI in year 2000. And released on her own recognizance. The usual background check did reveal this, but no other negative reports.
Hi, Dr. Thiessen, do you have anything you'd like to say at this point? I noticed earlier you were in your car and snapped a picture of yourself. We have you muted right now. I cannot hear you if you're speaking to us. So Dr. Thiessen, you have an option to call in if you would like, but I still cannot hear you. Board members, do you have any comments, or we can proceed at this point and make a motion or not, or we can bring this back on our agenda later. Oh, it looks like she's back.
Yes.
Dr. Thiessen, are you here?
She's muted. There we go.
Dr. Kolesh, you may need to unmute her manually.
Yes, I lost.
Great.
Yes, sorry. Thanks for having me. I'm in Florida and the internet is very sparse here.
Hi, I can see you and hear you now. Thanks. Do you have anything you would like to say at this point, Dr. Thiessen? It looks like she's cutting in and out on my screen, so maybe the connection's not great.
If she has access to the telephone number, perhaps that connection would be more stable.
Okay, in any event.
Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you now.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I would here really like to hear my elder for helping me this weekend. The internet is very here.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And I lost her again. This is all right, so a DUI from 20 years ago that it looks like that's the only thing that I can see that is the reason why this came before us. Board members, does anybody want to make a motion?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to grant licensure.
This is Dr. Kanoff, I'll second.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question to grant licensure for Dr. Connie Thiessen. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the ayes have it, and licensure will be granted, which will take us to tab number 8. in the matter of Dr. Thomas Januski, and this is under our initial review tab. Dr. Kolash or Ms. Shapiro, would you like to give us a board briefing?
Yes, this is Dr. Kolash. Dr. Januski has allegations of malpractice and unprofessional conduct.
Okay. Dr. Januski, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
Good morning.
Hi, Ms. Garvis. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Doctor?
Great. Okay. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes, just briefly. I know the board members have had the opportunity to review this matter, and we do appreciate the accommodation of moving from the April meeting to this meeting due to a scheduling conflict. As a brief overview, this situation involves care that was provided in October and November of 2017. TD presented with complaints that he was pulling his way back and that the problem occurred every 6 weeks. Dr. Januski performed a physical examination prior to initial treatment. TD specifically declined x-rays. He returned for approximately 8 visits. At times, Dr. Januski utilized an activator for adjustments because TD told him that his lumbar sciatic region was painful when adjusted. He did not return to the office until April 1st of 2019, when he presented unannounced to Dr. Januski's office with copies of an MRI and notes from a pain management physician demanding $5,000 in payment, claiming that Dr. Januski had hyperextended him and ruptured or herniated his disc. And the complaint, TD did not specify which visit caused the problems, but we presume that it was the last visit because he claimed he never came back after that. Based on his habit and custom, Dr. Januski would have noted if anything untoward happened during that or any other visit. TD obviously gave inconsistent reports to the physicians that he was seeing in California regarding his back problems. The MRI report specifically referenced being hyperextended by a chiropractor in February of 2018. The visits with Dr. Januski were in October and November of 2017. The MRI report also reveals that TD has significant degenerative age-related changes in his lumbar spine, including severe stenosis and disc bulges. Any issues that he experienced are related to his age and degenerative issues and not to the chiropractic treatment. As the members of the board know, even a properly performed adjustment can cause an increase in pain following the adjustment. We do not believe that there is any evidence of malpractice or unprofessional conduct on the part of Dr. Januski. He has been licensed with this board for many years without any incidents or history. As such, we'd ask that the board dismiss the complaint with no basis to proceed. Dr. Januski has traveled here to my office in Phoenix to virtually appear before the board this morning and is happy to address any questions that the board members may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Carvis. It is not clear to me if the patient with the initials TD is on the line right now or part of our meeting. Do we know if the patient is signed in or present?
I saw a telephone number pop up, but there was no identification with it. So I don't know if TD joined the conference.
I called in. This is Dr. Connie Tyson.
Thank you.
Okay. So Dr. Connie, if you can mute yourself at this point, that would help us out. And then if the patient TD is joining, we cannot hear you, and you either need to unmute yourself or call back in. So we will proceed with the meeting, and I'll ask my board members if they have any questions for either Ms. Carvis or Dr. Januski. I'll go ahead and start. This is Dr. Garino. It looked like the timeline of the events, the way that they happened, it was not convincing to me that this patient was injured or not, but part of what we rely on is good record keeping, and I felt like the records were in fact lacking quite a bit. As I looked through the records, it looked like on the first date of service, in our board meeting materials under patient records, I'm looking at page 2 of 17. The date of service is October 3rd, 2017. And on that first visit, it says it starts out with maintenance treatment. And so as the treatments continued between October and December, it looked like there were some type of sciatic complaints that evolved, you know, tingling sensations in the fingers, I believe. Not a whole lot of examinations performed, not a lot of orthopedic testing, not a lot of neurological findings. And then, you know, it appears that you're quite defenseless at that point when a patient comes back later and says that you injured them. So at a glance, that's what I see. We've got an MRI in October the following year, which is far removed from your last date of service in December, approximately 10 months post-treatment. Positive findings, but not really dating the injury and connecting it to your treatment or not. So my concern personally is not so much about if you in fact made this patient feel worse or not or injured them, although there's a problem with a consent to treatment form that apparently wasn't signed or wasn't provided. So I guess my question for you, Dr. Januski, is did you warn the patient that they could feel worse after your treatment? And we'll start with that.
When the patient first came in and he refused for x-rays or anything like that, we cover in our initial consultation that particular thing that you're concerned about, and he didn't have any problem whatsoever with or any questions at that particular point in time. So that he is no different than any other new patient when they come in. We ask for the same kind of situation. Now, when you said there wasn't a consent for treatment, you know, and as I look back on mine, consent for treatment and authorization for x-rays, you know, this is signed on my sheet.
Okay, so what date of service are you looking at? Is that the first date of service?
That's the very first time he was in, October the 3rd, 2017.
Okay, so so I'm going to take a moment and look for that because I either missed it or, but moving on. Do you acknowledge that on the first date of service you have written on their maintenance care?
Maintenance therapy or maintenance treatment was what he requested. He didn't want to get too involved with anything. He had been to many doctors, apparently chiropractors in California. You couldn't get a lot of information on him. He had some, you know, some tightness and lack of range of motion a little bit and things of that type, but nothing very serious. The first day he was in, he had hurt himself and was very stiff in his low back because he had done some yard work. That was it. And so that's the day we did the muscle spin, and that was the last time we did therapy because everything was doing a little bit better each intervening one as far as he reported when he came in.
Okay, and so looking at the next date of service that I'm looking at is 10/5/2017. And I'm looking at your daily visit note, and it says that patient had some tingling in the fingers, stiffness after the adjustment. You know, is there anywhere on there that you did any kind of examination findings to rule out if it was maybe coming from his neck, or is it coming from his shoulder or his elbow or thoracic outlet syndrome or from the hand? You know, I'm looking at a subjective complaint without anything really further investigating that.
The only thing that I recall was because of the yard work, he had done some shoveling and different things in his yard. And that was the little bit that he said he had never had it before. And sometimes he had trouble, you know, with tingling in his hands over the years. So we never did too much with it. And because the second visit, he was improved and the tingling was almost completely gone. So it didn't require doing a whole lot more other. I didn't feel that it was going to be any kind of a serious problem or anything that we really need to be know any more about, because it just, you know, it was just kind of an on and off thing. And that's how he was for several years. Nothing much had changed as far as injuries, accidents, anything of that type. And that was the only thing, that's the only reason nothing else was pursued at that point in time. Because it wasn't a new diagnosis. He had always been treated by the same thing. You know,
okay. Before this. So,
and also, if I may, Dr. Warino, just very briefly, on the date of the initial visit, a couple of days prior, on the 3rd, there are, in addition to the daily visit note, there is the patient history form wherein he describes the situation, rates his pain, describes what makes it better in the past and that it's an adjustment. There's also 2 pages of an examination form, which reflect a palpatory exam, reflex testing, some range, lumbar range of motion, and some other provocative tests that were performed. It's my understanding from reviewing the records and speaking with Dr. Januski, the patient was, you know, essentially interested in getting an adjustment for the condition because it had helped him in the past, and it was helping him along the way throughout the course of this treatment. And the notes, though in handwritten and not necessarily in clear soap format, they do contain the necessary documentation for each visit in terms of the subjective complaint, where he found issues objectively within the spine, within the palpatory exam, and specifically documents the areas where adjustment was performed. We believe that the visit notes do contain the necessary information, and that there was a limitation to a degree as to what the patient was willing to undergo based on his limitations and prior experience with chiropractic.
Dr. Bennett,
I don't see an exam finding anywhere in the records. Could you direct me to those?
Dr. Bennett, Dr. Guarino, this is Dr. Kolash, and I was reviewing the files that were submitted, and it does look like your board materials is lacking a few pages. There is a consent for treatment, and there is an exam form that he did supply. My apologies to the board and to Dr. Januski for the oversight in getting that in the board materials.
Martin, okay. This is Dr. Bennett. Dr. Greeno, can I ask Dr. Kolash some questions with regard to the content of the record?
Absolutely.
Dr. Kolash, do you have the exam documentation in front of you?
Let me bring it up. I do, sir. Yes.
Would you describe to me the content in terms of what provocative tests were done and whether vitals were taken and so forth?
Okay, so there was exam form as a paravertebral muscle spasm at lower thoracic and in the lumbar region as X'd out. Biceps reflexes plus one bilaterally, triceps plus one bilaterally. has, let's say, checked, it's got a number one checked off. The straight leg raise test was done and marked apparently as positive. Flexion of lumbar flexion 50 out of 60 with no pain. Rotation 25 and 20 out of 30 bilaterally with no pain. At least, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on that. The negative signs mean no pain, Dr. Januszki.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Patellar reflexes were plus one bilaterally. And a number of tests with no markings in them. Oh, wait, Patrick's fibrae was negative bilaterally. That appears to be the lumbar exam notes.
Any vitals?
Yes, there are vitals recorded, BP, pulse, height, and weight.
Good. Thank you.
Any outcome assessments?
No. Good.
There was nothing specifically documented beyond the case history form, which describes the presentation and the patient's interest in, quote, maintenance for back problems. And then obviously the positive findings that are noted on the exam forms that have just been reviewed.
That history form that you are referring to, is that the six, the handwritten history form with six lines of information, the last line of which referring to a history of heart disease?
Heart surgery in January 2017. Yes, doctor.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Green, if I may continue since we're on this.
Yes, please.
Dr. Januszki, good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
When you're entering plus one as a reflex finding, is it your understanding that that's a normal finding?
No.
So your records here indicating plus one reflexes would suggest then that there was hyporeflexia, there was a loss of reflex in all the...
It was somewhat diminished.
Okay. All right. Thank you. and am I missing a diagnosis anywhere in these records? I'm not seeing any diagnosis in these patient treatment records.
Well, I don't believe there was a diagnosis recorded because of normally the only time we include it, especially with the few visits that were here, is if it's going to an insurance company or lawyer for auto accident or thing like that. We usually, you know, don't put it in when there's only been a few visits. It should have been there because I'm sure we filled them out, but I don't see it recorded either. So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. the sequence here and just to underline what Dr. Guarino has also already outlined, we have a patient reporting with specifically with apparent neurologic symptoms in terms of paresthesia that may or may not be related to the upper extremity after a treatment. We have a later presentation of sciatica, which is identified as sciatica. My concern here is that these are significant neurologic symptoms that mandate clinical decision making when they present themselves, and I'm just not seeing. I understand that. Number one, that maintenance patients can be obnoxious about what your standard of care should be. And I understand that patients don't, I also understand that patients don't always tell us the whole truth. But my concern here is that there's no positive documentation of recognizing a threat to the patient's health following treatment in the form of neurologic symptoms and also in the presence of known decreased reflexes. And so there, I believe there is concern here about your exposed position when you have a cash maintenance patient come in and you don't think it's going to be a big deal. We all have those, but now it is a big deal. And now here we are. So I agree with Dr. Carino. We need to pay attention to some of this record keeping.
If I may, Doctor, one thing that I want to point out, in addition to all of that, and obviously, Dr. Janewski will listen and take the board's comments with respect to some areas of recommended improvement in his record keeping very seriously. The patient pain complaints, including these kind of waxing and waning neurological symptoms, were rather mild, and I understand even mild neurological symptoms need to be taken seriously, but the patient documented on his new patient history form that this was, a one out of a 10 scale in terms of his pain, that it, the intensity was five on a scale of 2 to 100, that, this was achy from when he was lifting. Also, I think it's important to note that while these symptoms kind of waxed and waned depending on his presentation and treatment and obviously his personal activity, by the time the treatment was concluded, there was no report of those ongoing issues. Furthermore, the patient had obviously declined x-rays, which is certainly his right, even if they're necessary. Obviously, the x-rays themselves would not have revealed this pathology. That would have to be something more specifically diagnostic in terms of an MRI or a CT. Dr. Janewski did respond to these complaints appropriately and also switched to an activator adjustment when the patient reported a painful or lumbar and sciatic region when adjusted. I agree if there were more detail here that would probably be helpful, especially looking back going over 2 years. But even in the face of a known disc bulge or herniation, which was not known at that time, and we don't know if it did exist, and no one will ever know, obviously, because the imaging was not done for such a long time later. But even in the face of those complaints, we all know that chiropractic treatment can be an appropriate conservative treatment for such things. And obviously what a patient is willing to undergo in their own care is certainly pertinent. Again, Dr. Janewski would take your comments with respect to record keeping very seriously. And if the board, would like him to take any sort of coursework in that regard, he would certainly be happy to do that. But he will also obviously be mindful of these comments. And sometimes when these issues come up and we look back with the retrospectoscope at our own records, we can identify areas for improvement, and that will certainly occur here.
Yeah, and just for the record, Dr. Janewski and I have been practicing in the same community for decades. I have great respect for the work that he does. His patients love him, and I don't see any evidence of a causative relationship between the patient's complaint and what happened in these records. I do, however, believe that there is some attention needed to some clinical decision making and record keeping. That had they been present, we would never even be having this conversation.
Well, can I say one thing?
Absolutely. Go ahead, Doc.
Interesting. This last few months, as actually probably when this, I had to provide all of this information, I have been investigating some different classes and things to help with my record keeping and things like that. I haven't enrolled in anything yet because I don't know what's the best, but I've been looking around to find, because I did realize after looking at some of these things, they could have been a little bit more thorough overall than what they are, not necessarily in reference to what TD's complaint is, but just overall when somebody else was looking at the record. So I appreciate your comments. And I had given that a little previous thought, previous to our meeting right now.
Dr. Janewski, this is Dr. Garino. Just for clarity, it looked like the patient requested, was it $5,000, something along those lines. Is there a current malpractice case pending against you?
No, nothing.
Okay. Just for clarification's sake, the patient never filed any sort of malpractice claim and never again raised the issue other than in the context of the in-person meeting with Dr. Januski and this board complaint, but no payment was made and no lawsuit was filed.
Okay, this is Dr. Guarino again. Dr. Kanoff, do you have any questions for Dr. Januski or Ms. Carvis?
This is Dr. Kanoff, none that weren't already covered.
Okay, and Ms. Powell, do you have any questions?
I just have one quick comment. The records that we received on TD from the pain management company are on a female, not a male, if that matters to anybody. Okay.
It sounds like maybe they need to have their record keeping looked at too, but they're not under our purview.
No, I just note that.
Dr. Bennett, do you have any follow-up questions?
I do not.
Okay, board members, what's your pleasure? Anybody want to make a motion?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make the motion to issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education and require 2 hours of record keeping and 2 hours of clinical decision making for a total of 4 hours to be completed within the next 60 days, in addition to the annual required continuing ed.
Okay, so specifically the non-disciplinary advisory letter for inadequate record keeping, including failing to diagnose a patient and I guess that's it, record keeping. Okay, is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay, any further discussion? You feel like that's enough? Enough hours, I mean?
I would like to, again, this is Dr. Bennett, and my background over the years has been teaching clinical record keeping and clinical decision making. And I'm okay with these numbers, kind of, but Tom, I would encourage you as part of your 12 hours to build on that. I was going to make a recommendation about double that amount, based just upon my history of teaching this stuff. And so I'm okay with this number, but I would strongly suggest to you that I know that you're interested in improving this, and I know that, and I'm going to tell you that I think that it's going to take more than that. I think that you need to probably commit at least half of your remaining 12 hours to this particular subject.
May I, Mr. Chairman, make a friendly amendment to Dr. Kanoff's
motion? I think it would be up to Dr. Kanoff to make any changes. But go ahead, Ms. Powell, if you'd like to say anything you'd like to say right now.
I was just going to suggest adding 2 hours to the record keeping. So it's a total of 4 hours for record keeping.
Okay, so is that a total of 6 then? Was it 2 hours of clinical decision making and 4 hours of record keeping?
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Kanoff, do you consider that a friendly amendment? Are you agreeable to that?
This is Dr. Kanoff. I'll accept the friendly amendment with the strong suggestion made by Dr. Bennett as well.
Okay, so I guess I would like to say, Dr. Januski, just commenting, your license number is 749 and my license is in the 5,000 range. So I can only imagine how many record change protocols have happened over the years that you've been licensed. So I salute you for that. And I'm gonna call for the question. Those in favor of Dr. Kanoff's motion to issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter for inadequate record keeping and failing to diagnose, and then a continuing education requirement of 2 hours in clinical decision making and 4 hours in record keeping to be completed within 6 months.
I believe it was 60 days.
60 days, okay. Go ahead and signify by saying aye. Aye.
Dr. Guarino,
yes,
this
Baskin.
Is Mona Baskin. Yes, I would like a roll call on this. It involves a case, and I think just to have a real clear record. Thank you.
Okay, I'm agreeable to that. Dr. Kolesh.
Yeah. Dr. Guarino?
Aye.
Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
Dr. Kanoff?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? All right, hearing none, the ayes have it. And Dr. Januszki, you'll be contacted by the board with the requirements and the decisions that were made today. Thank you, Ms. Carvis and Dr. Januszki, for joining. And we're going to move on now to tab number 9, which is our board business, or the governor's executive order.
Yes, Dr. Guarino, I'll paraphrase a little bit this executive order. Include some language about licensing boards, and it gives a little guidance for those boards that might have before them some complaints surrounding the COVID-19 and CDC protocols in that regard, where it, in my paraphrasing, says, please give the people who are being complained about education perhaps before discipline. And that's just my paraphrasing. So if you've read it and have a different interpretation, it's just there for your discussion.
Okay, so how do you think this applies to us?
So I'm just imagining if we get a complaint about a doctor's office that may have patients waiting in the reception room that aren't separated by 6 feet, and we get a complaint about that, that the board might consider a letter of admission or admonition or just education, as opposed to thinking that it should be an opened case. That's just my interpretation.
Okay, I guess my initial thought on this is we kind of handled this about 15 years ago when I was president of the Arizona Association of Chiropractic, when we didn't have any non-disciplinary advisory letters or remedies. You know, I feel like that's what we do. You know, if a complaint is made, you know, we have a non-disciplinary remedy that kind of allows us to deal with it. Because otherwise, how would we implement this? You know, we would, if we're not meeting as a board to make a decision, does the decision making lie on the executive director and staff to send out letters? You know, I don't see that we need to do anything differently at this point.
No, I'm just making the point that when the complaint comes before the board, that is the guidance from the governor's office. It's education above discipline on a first offense type basis.
Okay.
Is a non-disciplinary letter educational more than a discipline?
I would think that those are educational, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would just echo that. I believe it's, you know, it's non-disciplinary. It's,
so we would still meet on those issues. In other words, handle it as a complaint. Okay.
Yeah, and it's a little bit tricky, and I guess it depends on the offense as well, because, you know, we are mandated, all chiropractors, if we observe anything unprofessional or not law-abiding, to report it. So...
I agree with you, Dr. Guarino. I think that all of these things fall under potential threats to the public. I think that we don't need to necessarily change any particular behavior as a result specific to this event. I think that's appropriate that maybe we just memorialize the fact of this dialogue and as the way with which we dealt with it relative to these issues. I do have a question, however, about item number 5 in terms of the on the second or third page of the 10 items, and specifically relative to our role as a board and kind of that side of things. We are a entity that physically operates in the state and serve the public and an employer. And so this directive tells us that we shall develop, establish, and implement policies based upon all of this stuff, and specifically relative to item number H, limiting the congregation of groups to no more than 10 persons when feasible and in relation to the size of the location. I'm not stipulating that we're not doing that or suggesting that in any way. I'm just questioning whether, as the result of this directive, we should not be having dialogue relative to our responsibility relative to that.
Okay. Well, that's why Ms. Baskin is on the call.
And Dr. Carino, go ahead.
This is Dr. Kolash, and that's actually a pretty good segue into tab number 10, which is about future meetings and the potential that we have to have more than 10 people in our audience in person. If that's the way we go. And so part of my discussion was going to be that I'm thinking about various logistics to limit the number of people who are called into the boardroom at the same time. One of those strategies would be to take all of a certain type of agenda item and designate maybe an hour or an hour and a half for an estimated amount of time for those cases, and then have those people come in at like 9 to 10:30, and then have the next group of people, please don't show up until 10. Now, there is some concern about that because we can't preclude the public from wanting to attend our meeting, but we do have this guidance about how many people can be in the room. And so with their cooperation, we could still perhaps provide an audio or video monitor for people to look at like this venue that we're doing right now, but limit the actual number of people in the room. So those are some strategies that I'm looking at toward the guidance of this particular executive order.
So this is Dr. Garino. My thought on that is we need to be careful with spreading people out, you know, because sometimes people just don't show, you know, and so I think that when we have a board meeting, anybody on the agenda needs to be close and present, whether they're in the board meeting room or not, or whether in the hall or they're in the parking lot, which wouldn't be good when it's 105. I don't know how we call them into the room or make that happen, but, you know, there have been several cases where we've had formal interviews and we think we're going to spend a half hour to an hour dealing with something and that person just doesn't show and we got to move on to the next agenda item. So if we had two or three of those in a row and somebody thought they were, instead of showing up at a 9 o'clock meeting, that their time was going to be 11 and all of a sudden we need them at 9:30, it makes it a little bit trickier to deal with that. And I know that we've got some formal interviews and so on that are coming. So maybe one thing that we could do is we could, for the typical, whether to open the typical lesser escalated cases, you know, after they get done with their tab, they can be invited to leave. You know, they don't have to hang around and sit through a full board meeting, and that'll clear out the boardroom in a hurry. So just my thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a great suggestion, Dr. Green. And some of the things that we might also consider that I see a lot of businesses doing is this wait in the car and beyond a phone line. I know that we typically have a dial-in number, I believe, for every meeting. And yep. So it may just be, look, you need to be in your car. At least you have air conditioning. I know it's going to be summer. But you know, if you're at least on the line, then we can cue you in to be physically present at that time.
Ms. Powell?
Taking notes.
Yeah, I have a question. Would it sound too Mickey Mouse to suggest that we use the same type of little devices the restaurants do, and there's long waits, and then they invite you and your table's ready. I mean, that kind of solves the problem, because they can be anywhere as long as they're in the buildings or around the building somewhere. And then we just have Martin buzz them when it's their time.
I've not been a maker D, but I can look to see if those devices are available to rent or whatever. I don't know the technology and what the expense would be, but I'll look.
Well, and our staff could text people, you know, on their phones and tell them, hey, you're going to be up in the next half hour. Stay close, you know?
Yeah. And
unless they're on their phone or texting while they're waiting, or
you'll still get the notification.
Yeah. Well, I will check the availability as we move forward of the other meeting rooms here also, where we could have people congregate, but still have safe distancing.
Go ahead, Dr. Knopf.
Is it crazy to see if we can move it to a ASU classroom where there's more space?
Yes.
Just saying. They're not in business right now.
ASU, huh?
I would have to look into that. I don't know if there'd be a rental or liability issues involved.
Yeah, they just consolidated us into this building not long ago, so I don't see them letting us escape anytime soon.
What about the mandatory board attendance requirement for licensure? Do we want to consider, in an effort to minimize exposure during this period of risk, do we want to put a hiatus on that and make an announcement to that effect, or how do we want to address that?
And they give them more time.
Well, there's no reason that they can't join by phone. I mean, I don't know how we keep track of them, that they're on the phone the whole time, you know. But they don't have to be in the room in person, right? I mean, if we knew that they dialed in, we would hope that they were listening. I mean, I don't know, but put it on hiatus is a little scary to me, because, you know, so let's say we get through the summer and then we've got a resurgence of coronavirus and the flu and other things in October and September, and, you know, we can keep pushing people back.
And they actually submit a bit of an affidavit that said that they attended the full time. So that goes in their record. You know,
they're allowed to attend telephonically?
Pardon
me, this is Mona Baskin. I apologize, this is so awkward when we're on the phone, so I apologize if I'm speaking over anybody. I would agree with Dr. Guarino that your licensees that where you do have this requirement that they attend the meeting, they can have a presence by phone. That electronic presence, I believe, is a very viable alternative, and it would qualify under your statute. So thank you.
You know, and this is kind of new to me. You know, my daughter is in ASU right now, and she's taking online classes, and I'm asking her some of the questions. You know, how do your teachers know that it's you? And they start by taking a picture of themselves with their ID badge, and they submit it. And so it's kind of like, you know, they're proving their identity before they get through the call. So if we had any kind of video presence that they could sign into, somebody would have to manage that, you know. But that might be an option too, instead of just telephonically. But now we're asking Dr. Kolash to get a lot more IT savvy.
And Gigi is one of my staff members. She's helpful, and Jamie Shapiro has excellent IT capability. So I've got some good backup.
So food for thought, maybe another agenda item on another agenda. To
just a
that.
Quick follow-up on that. Did we not have a capacity issue today? I my sense was, I think it was Dr. Wald commented that the queue was full, or that there was an access issue. Are we capped in terms of attendees?
This is Dr. Kolash, and my understanding is that Google Hangouts meeting has capacity is 250 attendees. So I'm not sure why he got that message.
Okay, just checking. Just want to be sure.
Okay. So our next meeting is in 5 weeks. Should be in person, hopefully. And we discussed last time that we are going to start catching up on some of our formal interviews and some of our, we're going to have some longer meetings coming. So maybe pack yourself a snack. You know, I'd like to do a 20 or 30 minute break at most so we can get back to work, maybe around noon. And then we'll do what we can with what we've got. So I will officially call to the public. I don't know if anybody on the phone has anything they would like to say. This is your chance to talk to us. We cannot comment.
Yeah, this is Dr. Connie Tyson. I was applying for the license, the reciprocal from Minnesota, and I lost connection when you guys were speaking about me. Did that get finalized, or what was the result of that?
Technically, I'm not supposed to respond to any call to the public on our agenda, but due to the technical issues, I'll tell you that your license was granted.
Right. Okay. And Dr. Karina, for the record, we will say that you are referring back to that agenda item, and I believe it's agenda item F7, so you are in compliance with the open meeting law to respond to the doctor. Thank you.
Yay. And just so you guys know, when I did call back in, it did tell me I was going to be automatically muted because the meeting was full. So maybe there's just some glitches right now with Google Hangouts being, you know, overwhelmed.
Okay. Thank you for the feedback. Okay. I will entertain a final motion.
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make the motion to adjourn.
No, second the motion.
Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are you opposed? Okay. See you in 5 weeks. Time is 10:16 a.m. We are adjourned.
Adios.
Have a good day.
All right. Thank you, board.
Dr. Kolesh?
Yes, sir.
So I see on my screen now, I can see 5-6 people, but when we had as many as 15, 17, 18, I would only have one pop up at a time. Is there a setting that I'm missing to, because I would prefer to see the board members in case they have any kind of questions for me, they can flag me, wave at me, and I didn't really.
Okay, so if you scroll down toward the bottom of your screen, a taskbar kind of comes up.
I got it.
And then you scroll over to the three buttons.
Right, on the right.
And click on that, and there's near the top is change layout.
Okay.
And
so can I pull who I want to into my tiled screen, or does it just fill that for me?
I think it does that automatically by whom is speaking.
Okay. All right.
The spotlight, is that just the person who's speaking?
One person, if he wants more. Local, you would do tile, but
yeah. So the tiled is where you see the most people, and then you can scroll through those tiles page by page, and then the speaker does highlight.
Okay, side. That's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. All right. Have a good day, everyone.